It's great to see you all this morning. We are going to be in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I want to give everybody just a few minutes to be turning and opening to the book of Ecclesiastes. And as you're doing that, just want to welcome each of you, as has been expressed. We're so encouraged that you're with us. Certainly those who are a part of the family here, it's always a blessing for us to get together and to encourage each other and stir each other up in our worship to God and our service to Him and to each other. But for those who aren't a part of the group here, you encourage us, even if you don't know that, just by your presence and your interest in spiritual things and your thoughts about the Lord and what He's done in your life, what He continues to do. And we're very interested in that as well. So if we can do anything while you're here this morning to help draw you closer to Him, maybe to answer questions you have about the Lord, about the Scriptures, about who we are, we want to be of service to you, so please don't be shy about asking if there are ways that we can be helpful. The thought occurred to me as we were singing that last song, I was thinking about the calendar, and we are about a month away from spring. So there's that. And I thought of it because a lot of what we're going to be talking about this morning is related to the cyclical and the repetitive nature of life. You know, as much as we look forward to spring and the temperatures climbing and things getting warmer and the plants and the flowers blooming and blossoming, it doesn't take long before those temperatures climb a little bit too high and then we're wishing for cooler weather. And we get that and then we get too cold and, you know, the cycle just goes on and on. Repetition is an unavoidable part of life. Even this morning as we worshiped and we sang songs to the Lord and took communion, just think and reflect on the last maybe half hour or so. How has your time in worship to the Lord this morning been? Have you been able to focus? Have you perhaps been distracted by things going on? Maybe if you've been distracted, there are a number of reasons that could be the case. And my point is not to pass judgment on anybody, but to bring this up, that the nature of our assemblies is very repetitive in many ways. I mean, we change the songs and we change the scriptures and we change the messages on a regular basis. But much of what we do is very similar on any given week. And sometimes the challenge for us in focusing as worshipers and giving our best to God is overcoming that pull of repetition and monotony. Monotony and repetition, as I said, are things that are common to everyone. We all deal with them in some or to some degree. And what's really fascinating is that wrestling with monotony for many people can cause us to question our sense of purpose, to lose sight of it, if you will, or maybe even just to wonder about it altogether. And this is true for people whether you're a follower of Jesus or not. I mean, from a naturalistic perspective, somebody who doesn't really live with much thought about God, who looks at the monotony of the world and how repetitive it is, it's certainly the kind of thing that can drive someone crazy. I mean, because you look at the monotony and you look at the way the world works and it just seems to kind of go on infinitely. And it makes you wonder, if you think about it for very long, what am I really doing here? I mean, what's the ultimate purpose of my life and where am I going? And for those who believe in a creator, from a spiritual perspective, that monotony can cause other challenges. Because what it can do is it can deaden our focus on spiritual things. We get kind of caught up in the tide, the ebb and flow of life as we know it. And so it can deaden our perception of spiritual things. And it can cause us to wonder if, even as we're pursuing the spiritual, even as we're pursuing the Lord, if those pursuits are actually accomplishing anything. And the book of Ecclesiastes presents to us this monotony as something that is really intended by God to accomplish a purpose. It's intended to demonstrate the futility of life under the sun, apart from God. And it's intended by God in this book to get us to really force our hand and bring us to the point where we have to consider the case for a creator. So what we're going to do this morning is examine just the introduction, the first chapter of Ecclesiastes. We'll kind of bookend it, and then we'll jump to the very end. But I want to just give you, before we read the text in the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, a little bit of background. There will be some phrases that will come up in this chapter, in this reading, that are meaningful and significant in the book itself that I want you to pay attention to. The first one is the phrase, under the sun. It's a phrase that shows up 25 times, depending on your translation, but 25 times or so in the book of Ecclesiastes. And when the writer of Ecclesiastes uses this phrase, what he means, what he's referring to, is the physical realm. Everything that we see, everything that exists around us, without consideration for God or anything beyond this physical life. So when he talks about life under the sun, just kind of draw a line in the atmosphere, in the sky, and consider that what the writer is commenting on is everything below, everything in this realm. He's taking God out of the equation. There's another phrase that comes up in relation to his findings regarding life under the sun, and it's the phrase, vanity of vanities. It's a phrase that shows up 40 times in Ecclesiastes, and what it really means, literally, it's a picture of something that's like a vapor. It's something that's futile or meaningless. It's there for a moment, but it's fleeting. It's temporary, and then in the next moment, it's gone. And so that's a phrase that we'll notice as we read the first few verses of Ecclesiastes as well. And what it does, what we'll see in the text that we're about to read, is that it brings the writer to this conclusion in verse 3, or this question, really, that he poses. And the question is, what's the point? What advantage does man have in all the work that he does in this life? I mean, and as we're going to see, the writer of this, King Solomon, was someone who was in position to examine and search every corner and was familiar with all kinds of work that people did. And so it brought him to this question, what are we really accomplishing with all these things that we fill our time with? Now, what's really also worth noting about the book of Ecclesiastes is it's a book that a lot of times gets kind of a bad rap as being like super depressing. You know, and it kind of makes sense when you listen to the writer talk about life and he says, vanity of vanities, everything's vanity, it just means nothing. And then later on, sometimes even in the same chapter, he'll say, you know, there's one thing that's good in life, and it's to eat and drink and enjoy the fruit of your labors, and it's a gift from God. Sometimes you see the author, excuse me, commenting in very different ways, and you think, what's going on with this guy? He can't make up his mind. He's not schizophrenic. The thing is that he's reporting on his findings in real time. What the book of Ecclesiastes is a laboratory experiment in which this author, this writer, Solomon, is exploring every nook and cranny that life has to offer to try to figure out, where does meaning really come from? And so as he uncovers one place, or as he goes through one door and explores it, he finds out, man, that's just vanity. And then in the next breath, he'll say, but here's something that gives meaning to this. So you see that that contrast at times as we read. And because of that, this kind of lesson is designed to do one of two things. If you are a believer in Christ, if you're a disciple of Christ, this should give us reassurance that even as we go through the mundane and the daily monotony that we really can't escape, that it's accomplishing something good. And that we don't have to worry about the end goal or the ultimate purpose of our lives, because as followers of Jesus, he answers that question. If you're somebody, though, this morning who's not in that place in your life, maybe you're on the fence about who Jesus is or whether God is real or he exists, then what I hope you'll take from this is the challenge, the call to evaluate what your life is really all about. Where does meaning and purpose come from? And those are some of the things that I hope you'll be thinking about as we read and as we study. So let's take a look at Ecclesiastes 1, and we'll read the first 11 verses together. Ecclesiastes begins in verse 1, "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. Blowing toward the south, then turning toward the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses, the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see this? It is new. Already it has existed for ages which were before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things, and also of the later things which will occur. There will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Let's pause right there, and what you may have seen in this first few verses of Ecclesiastes 1 is a picture of monotony. I mean, you can't read these descriptions of the sun and the wind and the waters and life and not come away just feeling like you're that proverbial hamster kind of running in circles on the treadmill. And he does it in a couple of ways. He starts by talking about nature. And the first thing that he mentions in verse 5 is the cyclical nature of the sun. The sun rises and the sun sets. Why? Every day, the sun rises and the sun sets. But why does it do that? So that it can hasten to its place and rise again. We make our orbit around the sun once in a year. The earth rotates once a day, and it's been doing that ever since the beginning. And if you do the math on it, it can be fascinating, and it can be also a little bit depressing. I crunched some numbers on this, and the number of times that verse 5 has happened just in my life since January 19th, 1984, is just short of 14,000 times. And if you go back just to the beginning, let's assume conservative dates for the age of the earth at 6,000 years old, so about 4,000 BC, are some of the most conservative estimates for the age of the earth. Even if you do the math for that, can you guess how many times the sun has risen and set, only to do it again? 2.19 million. Where's the meaning in that? I mean, we go about our busyness and our rat race, and sometimes we lose sight of the fact that the universe is doing what the universe has always done. How about the wind in verse 6? It blows toward the south, then it turns toward the north. What if the wind gets tired of blowing to the north and the south? Can it do anything different? Could blow east, could blow west. But beyond that, it could not blow. And then that's pretty much all your options. It's doing one of those things at any given point, at any place on the planet, at any point in time. And so, even with that, even with the wind, you have a picture of monotony. In verse 7, Solomon goes on and describes the water cycle. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Melanie and I were driving through Matter Park here in town just recently, after the heavy rains earlier this week and the snow's melting, and so everything's flooding. And even in other parts of central Indiana, there are all these flood warnings in places you're supposed to avoid and not drive on the roads so you don't get swept away in the water. You ever wonder, I mean, when the Mississinewa River is so full that it's about to overflow into Matter Park, where does all that water go? I mean, because if you wait long enough, it gets to the point where you could actually walk across it at other times of the year. And you may already know the answer to this if you're good with geography. The Mississinewa River flows over and empties into the Wabash, somewhere close to Peru. But where does all that water go? Well, the Wabash continues on its journey and empties into the Ohio River. And that, of course, empties into a bigger river, the Mississippi, and that empties into the Gulf of Mexico. Where does the Gulf of Mexico empty? It just takes all that water and keeps taking it, but it never overflows. I mean, those places on the beaches where the waves come in and the tide comes in are the same as they've been for the most part for hundreds of years. And that's because of this cycle. The water flows into the sea, but then it evaporates into the air and it forms clouds, and then it goes over the land and comes down in rain and snow. And it just keeps going and going and going. And it's monotony. And we look at nature and we think, well, that's nature, but my life is going to be different. I'm going to do something with my life that's meaningful, you know? And so Solomon investigates personal things. He makes this personal. He talks about human existence. And so maybe you're thinking, okay, well, these are inanimate objects. Is man really any different, though? In verse 8, all things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. You know, even when we see things that are new and novel, or we hear things that are new, are we ever really satisfied with it? How long does it, when you get that like new phone, you know, for Christmas or whatever, or a new vehicle, how long does it last before the novelty wears off and you're ready for something else because it doesn't satisfy us anymore? The eye isn't satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. And what he also goes on to point out in verses 9 and 10 is that even those things that we think are novel are really not that novel. That which has been is that which will be. I mean, is there anything really that we can come up with or that we can do that has never, we can honestly say has never been done before? Even people that invent things that have never been seen on the planet are really just doing variations on a theme. People have been inventing new things for all of human history. And so we can read something new, we can hear something new, we can do something that we've never done before. And yet for all of that, the novelty really isn't as much, it really isn't what we think it is. And then finally in verse 11, the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about how there's no remembrance. Even if you were to do something that's never been done before, even for those who invent things or change the world in novel ways, if enough time passes, people forget. And let me just illustrate this for a moment practically. I want to ask for a show of hands. I want you to raise your hands. How many of you know your great-grandparents? Raise your hand. Or knew them. Or knew them. Okay, go back a generation. Great-great-grandparents. How many of you knew your great-great-grandparents? A few. Great-great-great-grandparents. Grandparents. Anybody? And no matter how many people are raising their hand, if we keep going back, eventually all the hands are going to go down. And it wasn't because they weren't notable people. In some cases, maybe our ancestors were the movers and shakers of their day, and they were the world changers. But it doesn't take long, does it, before we really forget who they are. Maybe we know the name. Maybe we can go visit a tombstone or a burial plot. But we don't really know them. I mean, even some of the people in history who have done the most and been remembered the most, people like Shakespeare, even going back to Greek philosophy, Aristotle and Plato, people know about them, but how many people really know them? Like, could tell you what they looked like, point them out on a street corner if they saw them. And the thing is, even those who do novel things, eventually there's no remembrance of them either. And if that's true for us in our generation, how many generations do you suppose we'll have to get into in the future for that to be true for them with regard to us? How many years before somebody forgets my name and the color of my hair and what my favorite food is? Vanity of vanities is what the preacher says. If we're looking for meaning under the sun. So, what he goes on to do here is that as he's faced with all of these tedious and and frustrating problems and all of this repetition, what he begins to describe in, if you go down to verses 13 and 14, for those who are looking for meaning on that hamster wheel, and it's under the sun and God's out of the picture, here's what the writer says. Here's what Solomon says, verse 13. And I set my mind to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. When we take God out of the picture, what we're left with is just this never-ending cycle of monotony and repetition and nothing new under the sun. And the wisest man that ever lived, one of the richest men and most powerful and influential men in his day, what he said about that pursuit is that it's grievous. It's an affliction. Trying to find ultimate lasting meaning just here in this life under the sun. And so that brings us to what the writer refers to as the conclusion of the whole matter. And I just want to offer a couple of brief thoughts with this. Go to chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes, and I want you to notice, let's read the last three verses of the chapter. This is one of those places, those glimpses of hope and meaning that the writer offers. And if you want to get the most out of life, here's what it looks like. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 24. Solomon says, there's nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after wind. So he says the best thing you can do is to eat and drink and tell yourself that your labor is good. And if you can do that, it's a gift from God. And so his point here in so many words is that what enables us to enjoy life under the sun is an understanding that there is life above the sun. When we give consideration to the fact that there is a creator, and when we're willing to be pleasing to him and to pursue his interests, what Solomon says then is that that person can eat and drink and enjoy their labor because they know that it's from God. And they also know that there's more to life and existence than just that. But see, the problem is, if I take God out of the picture, no matter how good the things are that I have in my life, and I don't think he's saying that you can't find enjoyment. I mean, the person who doesn't believe in God, it never has enjoyment. But here's the thing. If I don't believe in God, that enjoyment that I find, all I'm going to be thinking about is how I can hold on to it. Where am I going to go to be able to make sure that that joy doesn't leave me? And eventually, there's nowhere to go but to the grave. And I think that's the idea here, is that when we look at life without God, it changes our perspective so that we're so consumed by finding everything, getting everything out of this life that we can. And when that's my pursuit, I'll never get enough. But when we see that there is a creator, it enables us to be content with this life, knowing that there's far more beyond it, and it's far better. And so a number of times throughout this book, Solomon will say something like that in these texts. He'll say similar things. The best thing you can get out of life is just to eat and drink and be merry and enjoy the simple things. Be content with your daily life. And understand that it's a gift from God. And all of that leads to his ultimate conclusion at the end of the book. And we'll turn and read this as we close. Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14, Solomon famously says this. Chapter Chapter 12, verse 13, the conclusion when all has been heard is, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. So there's nothing else that we can find other than this. I mean, at the end of the day, we can look at the ends of the earth, we can overturn every stone, we can go through every door and look for meaning. And what Solomon figured out is it's not going to be found in possessions, achievements, pleasure, novelty, riches, reputation. None of that stuff is going to give us the meaning that we truly want out of this life. But we can find it in fearing God and keeping His commandments. This is what we were made to do. And as a reminder, at the end of the book, he says, what's going to happen one day is that we're going to be brought into judgment. And for those who live life under the sun, just for the things under the sun, all of that's going to be gone. And there's nothing that's going to be left standing of substance or of meaning. But for those who do fear the Lord and who keep His commandments, when God brings those acts into judgment, there'll be people who were able to find true meaning, not just in this life, but permanent and lasting meaning. That's the invitation for each of us this morning, is to look to the Lord for meaning. If you look to the world for meaning, you will find an infinite number of answers. I mean, just type it in on Google. What is the meaning of life? And you'll find all kinds of things, from community to happiness to self-interest, whatever the case is. But there's no shortage of ways the world tries to answer it. But the book of Ecclesiastes shows us that they're all eventually going to leave us wanting more. But God can fill us. If you're in a place in your life where you're looking for that meaning and you have yet to find it, you can find it in the Lord. We want to help you with that. If you're ready to give your life to Him and start looking for some of those answers, how He gives you meaning, let us help you with that. Let's study together and show you from Scripture how God can change your life, how He can make you like Him. If that's something you are committed to, but you've been getting distracted, maybe looking for meaning in other places, then let's refocus our attention on eternity. And understand the beauty and the value and the greatness of what God has created for His people. If you have a spiritual need and we can help you with it in some way, let us know. Come to the front and let's stand and sing together.